Thank you for choosing to listen to the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast. In a myriad and plethora of other podcast conversations you could be choosing, we are really grateful that you chose to click on our link. And why should you choose to listen to the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast? Well, not least because we have honest, open, insightful conversations with leaders from across the recruitment industry and beyond. We often invite people on who are leaders and experts in markets and sectors that we believe we can all truly learn from. Just a word of thanks to our sponsor, Pager, and to our proud partners, Needy and Inclusion Crowd, and a warm welcome to our new partner, Keybridge IT. More about all of those later on in the show. So without further ado, let's get to know this week's guest. This is Leisha Holmes, and our next guest is somebody who I had the absolute pleasure to meet at the Recruitment Agency Expo in London at the start of 2024. And we've been following each other avidly on LinkedIn, not least for our passion for talking about all things business development. And in this really high energy and really valuable episode today, we actually start off with, what does business development actually mean? And let me tell you, Charles's definition, I think, should be on the wall of every recruitment company across the world, because it, to me, it's exactly how recruitment businesses should be the business developing. We talk around Generation Z and Generation Alpha and this instant gratification world that we've created in terms of using Snapchat. And are they actually ever going to pick up the phone? So there's a real list in there for leaders who are bringing in the new generation, because we'll all be doing that at some point. And if you are listening as somebody from that generation, you know, you might want to add some comments in the comments below. And then we talk around what a top biller's doing, how a top biller's still outperforming people, even in challenging markets. I promise you, this is one for NLP lovers, because we talk about a lot around the psychology, values, beliefs. Whether you've got 6 months recruitment experience or whether you've got 60 years recruitment experience, you're going to love this episode. Charles is absolutely electric. Without further ado, let's jump in. We are so proud at the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast to be sponsored by Pager. Pager helps recruiters to build personal brands, to identify new business opportunities, to attract those hard-to-find candidates, and to basically have better conversations. Now, you will have a large network that you want to build credibility with on LinkedIn, and sometimes posting content every day feels impossible. Now, that changes once you have Pager. Pager provides you with the ideas, the content, and the scheduling capability to produce daily content to build out your own personal brand in minutes. And for business development too. Pager identifies companies that are advertising jobs, have key hiring indicators such as funding rounds, mergers, acquisitions, or senior appointments, and then alerts you to this daily. Pager also enables you to write candidate-centric job adverts without bias in seconds. So once you advertise your job, Pager will then automatically create a branded post and publish it to LinkedIn without you even having to lift a finger. So when you want to actively source candidates, you can create complex Boolean strings in seconds. All you need to do is to provide the job title and location. Now, Pager is making thousands and thousands of recruiters smarter and faster. For more information, click on the link pager.co to book your demo, and remember to mention the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast when inquiring. Now, back to the episode. This is Leisha Holmes, and I'm your host on the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast. And I am so excited to welcome to our global community today somebody who I've actually met in real life. I think he grabbed me at the Recruitment Expo back in March in London, which was a fantastic event if you went to that. But we've been following and supporting one another on LinkedIn. And I think his expertise and the topic we're going to talk about today is something that is probably 2024's most talked about subject. So without further ado, let me introduce you today. This is Charles Kiriaki, and he is a master NLP practitioner and bespoke business development training. So we're going to be talking about BD today. Welcome to you today, Charles. How are you?
Thank you very much. Yeah, delighted to do this with you, Leisha. So yeah, excited to get into it.
Yeah, I'm excited to get into it too. So I can't believe people over on LinkedIn, which is, let's face it, that's where most people will be clicking on this link from, that they won't know who you are, because you are really quite a prominent voice on LinkedIn. You're really engaging. You share a lot of, I think, really valuable content, but there will be some because we have a global audience. So just give us an overview of who you are, how you've sort of come into this role as a business development specialist, and a little bit about your own personal journey.
Yeah, awesome. So I started in recruitment back in 2014. I was one of those weird people that wanted to actively get into recruitment. I didn't actually fall into it. Started off as an apprentice. My highest qualification to date, besides the NLP, is a level 2 NVQ in sales, right? Amazing. But yeah, basically, I done healthcare recruitment for about 2 years or so. I done social working recruitment for about 3-4 months. Didn't really like that market. And then was given an opportunity to build a market from scratch for Band 5 RGNs, Registered General Nurses in the UK. Okay. Built that market with another colleague called Charlie. Think about a Charlie and a Charles on the same desk.
Love it.
But we built that desk, and I had roughly, I think, any given week, a minimum of sort of 80 or 90 sort of nurses working for me at any point.
Crikey.
Yeah, so we were doing like together as a team, 10-15k weekly GP. But when the market crashed, we just thought, okay, cool. Like, there was no progression there. Let's look at something else. So I joined a company called Projectus, which was by far the best thing I'd ever done. And that was permanent recruitment. So it was a completely different market. Yeah. And, you know, it was dealing with VPs of sales in medical technology and, you know, the imposter syndrome in my head saying I've got an NVQ level 2 in sales and these have all got like masters in biomedical sciences. Like, it was definitely a transition.
Oh, I love it.
Again, because I was so passionate about BD, I set up the surgical desk and I was the first person to really go health level with retainers. Got 30% terms with the majority of my clients, which is the highest in company history. Became a manager after about 2 years or so, led a team. I went to President's Club five times out of the 6 years that I was there.
Wow.
And took my guys and my team to President's Club the 2 years I was a manager. But then during COVID, as a lot of people, you start asking yourself the question, right? What is it that I want to do with my life? But coaching has always been my passion. That's why I've done NLP and I paid all that money by myself. So I took a job as an L&D manager with zero L&D experience, with no understanding of what an L&D department does. They decided to pay me a salary as a head of global L&D. And I built that department for them and created handbooks, video library. I've done all the in-person training academies from scratch. Advanced training, leadership training, both in the UK office, the German office, and obviously the remote stuff for the Arizona office as well. But in October 2023, like a lot of tech recruitment companies, the market was really, really tough. And they made the decision to get rid of the marketing in the L&D department, which was the best thing that could have ever happened to me, because now I'm running my own coaching business, which is absolutely my passion. And as I've mentioned, BD is completely my specialty. So what a better time to start a coaching business and specialize in BD, right?
I absolutely love it. I mean, God, there's so many things. My brain is just going off on different tangents here, all the things I'm going to try and remember to cover with you. But I just want to pick up on a couple of things. First of all, thank you for sharing your story with us. And I think I love, let's start at the beginning, that you chose recruitment, unlike most people who tend to fall, certainly in my generation, that sort of fell into it. But actually, I think it has become an industry of choice. So, I mean, was it the meritocracy? Why did you choose recruitment?
Well, it's a really interesting one, really, because like, and I won't go too into detail about my sort of life before recruitment, but, you know, dad left home when I was 16. Mum was a cancer survivor. She was in and out of hospital. You know, I was a young carer at like 15, 16 years old. And, you know, we were always broke. We had bailiffs knocking on the door all the time.
Oh, gosh.
But I would never put myself first and always used to help my friends because I was quite a good speaker and I could help them with their interviews and I could spot things and stuff. So I remember when I was signing on at the job centre, because I was crippled with mental health issues, I couldn't hold down a normal job. I hated working in retail and things like that. And I asked them, like, I love people. I love working with people. I'm very entrepreneurial. I'm great at speaking. Is there a job or a career that sounds like that? And they said, well, it sounds an awful like recruitment. I went, oh, is that a job? Like, I can help people change their life by getting an opportunity. Like, that sounds amazing. They're like, yeah, we'll just put you down for admin. And I was like,
what?
No, I'm like the least admin type of person. I was like, I started researching like recruitment, but every single recruitment job, Leisha, that I was looking at required a degree or 1 year experience when I was looking into it. I didn't go to university because I thought, well, I'm probably going to end up in sales or something. You don't need a degree.
Don't need to. No.
That's when I found a training organization in Hertfordshire and I met the guy. And I'll never forget it because he sat me down and after about 5 minutes of talking to me, he went, wait right there. he went out into the office, he came back with three job descriptions and was like, you're going to be a fucking superstar. Like,
yeah.
When I looked, I was like, mate, £600 a month, are you mental? It's ridiculous. He was like, yeah, but you'll do your apprenticeship, you'll learn on the job, and then once you pass, like, you can earn like 100 grand a year or the rest of it. I was like, that's not a lot of money, mate. That's very, very low. But
yeah,
I believe after that, like, sometimes you've got to take a slingshot opportunity, right? You go back a few steps to then launch yourself multiple steps forward.
You took a gamble and you backed yourself. It's interesting, actually, and my own story, which, you know, and I know we're going to move on from this, but very quickly, is that during my HR, I didn't go to university. That's because I failed my A-levels quite catastrophically. I managed to get myself into a local tech college, did my H&D in business and finance, and actually what we would now call HR and people, it was personal development, and I excelled in all these areas and marketing. And I mean, I ended up going on to do the Chartered Institute of Marketing diploma. I just loved the whole concept. And during my first year's summer break, they offered the students a chance to go and work in industry for free, i.e. you didn't get paid, but it was to go and work for a financial services company doing their marketing, and everybody else just was going to go and work in their pubs, their shops, you know, going in their £100-£200 a week or whatever. And I chose to get paid nothing for the 6 weeks. I still worked in the evenings in the pub and the shop that I worked in, but who got out of the whole, I think there was about a cohort of about 30 of us, who was the one at the end of the second year when we all finished the diploma, when we presented to the local business community, who got the job in marketing? Me. I did. I was the only one that got a job straight away because I had the experience. So I think there's a lot to be said there. And I think apprentices have become such a commonplace thing now in recruitment, which I'm really pleased to see. It's almost gone full circle, because as a parent to young people, you know, I think I'm not saying a degree is a privilege, but I think it's not a necessity to go and get yourself a degree, get yourself into debt. There are so many career paths available to young people now. So I like the fact that from a, you know, evolution point of view, you're sort of 10 years into your career, you've seen the benefit. So I think that might resonate with some of our sort of listeners who are at the start of their journey. Maybe you are listening now and you are on an apprentice in recruitment. We do get a lot of people from, you know, who are starting out. So I think it's really nice to hear that from you, that testimony. But let's move on, because I think one of the things that you talked about there is this kind of, you know, I often think the universe works in mysterious ways, and what could have been catastrophic for you at the end of 2023, when so many people have lost their jobs due to, you know, the economic downturn, the sort of the way that whole industry got annihilated, the tech industry. I've never seen anything like it in all my years, and it's still happening as we record this now. But you saw that as an opportunity to launch your own BD specific L&D. So in your experience, having done a decade in the job, let's just first of all define, what is business development? What do we mean when we say that?
It sounds really muggy when you say it like this, right? But it's essentially just developing your business, right? And I know that when we had a conversation before, I mentioned that my first job in recruitment, I sat down at my desk and I had my computer, my phone and all the rest of it. Director essentially said, this is your business. This is your business. Anything that you do, every single call you make, you need to look at that as information gathering to grow and expand your business. So when I work with companies now and they say, oh, we're doing BD power hours, and, you know, oh, I don't have time to do BD or whatever, I don't really look, BD power hours are great, right? I love them. But you can do BD when you're doing your candidate sprints. Do you know what I mean? Like, you can speak to a candidate and then go through their CV and realize that there are three companies that you weren't aware of. You can then subtract maybe 2 points of contact from there. You can get references from them. You can get referrals. All of these different things you can use to expand your business. So I think, unfortunately, Leisha, a lot of people think of BD as just pure cold calling and just rejection. And then if you think of rejection and just cold calling, you think of what cold calling means to a lot of people. It's a bit of a negative connotation to it, right? People put it off naturally. And look, I sometimes, unfortunately, put things off when I don't like it or if I'm not good at it.
Yeah, of course, we all do.
Nation, right? It's just, you're human. But
yeah,
it's a very long-winded answer to
it's,
that.
But it's, that's kind it, of what I think. It's perfect as an explanation, because obviously I'm a, you know, we both have the same clients. We both deal with recruitment agencies, right? And the recruitment industry is our, you know, that's our audience. And so often I will interview somebody that has been asked to do BD for the first time, right? And I would, that is the first question I say. So then what do you actually mean by that? What do you actually mean by business development? Because what they mean is they've been asked to sit there and cold call. Now, to me, that's not business development. There'll be people rolling their eyes, no doubt, because this is all nuances and this is all play on words. And, you know, you're basically splitting hairs and, you know, but actually we're not. What Charles has said there is, to me, and I'm, you know, a bit of a veteran in the industry now, I think if you create a truly holistic mindset when you start somebody in their recruitment journey, or whether that's you listening, I was a recruiter in your early career, and you create this microcosm of my clients and my customers are all my business, then you don't ever feel like you need to cold call, because actually that candidate catch up call, oh, you've been for an interview, you know, where, who was that with? Oh, wow. Okay. How did that go? And, you know, or you've left your job, right? Well, I'll need to take a reference, you know, or, oh gosh, you've got a friend that's looking for a new job. What do they do? Oh, they're a senior manager. These are all business development opportunities, but you're going to do it in a way that is not contrived, is not seen as, I have to say, after 25 years, if you turn around to me and said, go and cold call somebody, I'd be like, oh my God. Whereas, you know, if you said, you know, I've got a really great lead here, it's somebody that's interviewed there and, you know, they are using RetroX at the minute, I'd just be like, oh, give us the phone. It's all around the, and actually I think your definition is what should be the benchmark of how recruitment companies ask their recruiters to actually run their business. And whether that is in a, I think the problem we've got is that certainly as we record this in 2024, it's been a very challenging market for a lot of businesses, particularly around STEM recruitment. I think, to be honest with you, most markets that you speak to, there's very few little pockets, but you should be doing this all day, every day anyway. That's my mantra.
Well, on that as well, I think one of the biggest problems, I think there's a few problems that I've certainly encountered since running my own coaching business, right, is a lot of the younger recruiters that have recently got into recruitment, right? Think about the pandemic happened 4 years ago. I work with a lot of recruuters that have only got like 2 years experience, three years, et cetera. Mm-hmm. You know, you and I have been in recruitment. I mean, you've been through the ups and downs and different ups and downs to what I've had, for example. But we have come through a generation where essentially you had to pick up the phone. Like there wasn't really, like if I ever told my manager I've sent an email, I'm waiting to hear from them, you'd get a clip. You'd
be like, what? Yeah. Or a verbal one. He wasn't physically abused everybody, or I hope he wasn't.
But I would be told like, you need to bloody get on the phone to that person. Whereas I speak to people now and they're like, oh yeah, like, well, no one picks up the main line and no one's got a mobile, so I just email them and I don't really want to pester them, so I'll wait. And I'm like, okay, that's a natural human inclination. We don't want to pester people. And think about it, when we were kids, our parents would say, don't speak to strangers, don't interrupt people when they're busy. What do we do as recruiters? We call strangers and interrupt them when they're busy, right?
I've never thought about that before. Oh my gosh.
This is why a lot of recruiters' natural inclination, if you speak to a candidate, right, a candidate thinks of our service as free and useful. A client thinks of our service as useful, but it's not free. And a lot of companies, they charge astronomical fees. One of my clients that I was speaking to yesterday potentially sold his first ever retainer. The retainer's 25 grand. 25 grand. Nice. Us, we think of that and go, oh my God, they're going to pay us 25 grand up front. Hang on a minute. Like, one of the major problems that we have with BD is that recruiters undervalue the service and think, oh, I can't believe they're paying for this. No. These clients don't know how to do recruitment. They don't know how to manage a candidate through the process and all these other variables. They don't understand that. We do. So that's one of the major problems as well, is recruiters seriously undervalue how important our job is.
I think I want to pick up on that. And then there's something I'm going to go back to in a second. So I hope I remember with my middle-aged brain. And the thing I want to pick up on is what you just said there, that the value that we place upon our service, we have to stop saying that we just send CVs. You know, if a client's saying, she just send me the CV over. No, that's not what we're doing here. You're buying my knowledge, my benchmarking, my insight, my talent pooling. You know, I can give you so much more information. And I think that's where, going back to your definition of what true business development means, it's immersing yourself in that industry. And it's not saying, I've got to do 2 hours of BD today and I've got to do 2 hours of candidate call states. Your goals and your targets should all be on outcomes, in my opinion. That's the first thing. And the thing I have remembered to say is that there's a lot of preconceived ideas around Generation Z and therefore Generation Alpha as they come through as the new talent pool, that they have grown up entirely in a generation of Snapchat and social media. And as the parent to, you know, 17 and 19 year old, they actually do pick up the phone and they are pretty good at ringing me if they need me. And they do actually FaceTime their friends. So I think that might be because of me. I've just always encouraged them to get on the phone. But 90% of their friends never call them. It's all on Snapchat. And so I think leaders, and I'm going to ask you this question, leaders need to be prepared for this influx, because, you know, don't think this isn't going to affect you, because in 5 years, 10 years, when you need to hire in people, you're going to need to think about this, that that's not how they communicate. And so for them, the thought of even picking up the phone to ring their parent or their friend, they were just under Snapchat and that's it. It's a different way to communicate. So what are your observations on this specific new generation coming through, and how we as, you know, leaders have to be inclusive with regards to this and the fact that this is what they've grown up with?
Yeah. I think it's a really important point. And I think we had a conversation about this before that, what previous generations have done to give the new generation is great in a lot of ways. But unfortunately, the more comfortable you get, unfortunately, life does get harder, right? And I mentioned this to you before. If I'm hungry, I can go on my phone and I can get McDonald's to my house in 5-10 minutes. If I want a coffee, I can get coffee delivered to my house. If I want a new video game or a new book, it comes to my house. If I need a new laptop, it comes tomorrow. Everything I can get at my fingertips. Whereas, yeah, topic of the conversation around BD, right? It doesn't just happen like that. I can probably count on one hand the amount of times I've picked up the phone, the client's answered, and I've taken a job spec. It's very, very rare. My best clients were won after months, if not years. I still get clients message me on LinkedIn, obviously haven't looked what I'm doing now, going, hey, Charles, don't suppose you can help me out with a new opportunity or help me out with finding this person. It's the long game. Now, in terms of being more inclusive to the new generation, I think there needs to be a bit of compromise from both sides, okay? Mm. I think it's a bit of compromise in respect to the newer generation typically are better when it comes to communicating on LinkedIn, communicating on email, and having a bit more sort of forward-thinking language and stuff on text and whatnot. But where I feel like a lot of them do lack is like what you said, is the, because they expect things like that and they haven't had to deal with too much, that many sort of objections generally sort of in life, things have been a lot more comfortable, that initial objection that you're going to get from a client, it can crush a lot of them. Whereas, like I said, when I got into nursing recruitment, my only training was, here's a book of 2,000 contacts, call them and get some jobs on. And by the end of the first day, they were like, have you got a job yet? And I was like, what the hell? I've literally
picked up. What the hell?
Person has said, we're working with another agency, we don't want to work with you. So all I had the first 3-4 weeks was just horrendous objections, horrendous rejections, but that calcified in my brain and made me strong.
I love that word. And it does and I think that you learn. I mean, we all know this from, if we're all podcast fans, then we all know from listening to other podcasts that away from recruitment, that, you know, the best learned in life are from your mistakes and your failures. But I think that instant gratification culture that we have created, you know, my generation, I'm Generation X, we've created this world, and generation, you know, millennials, they've created this world for, we have to ensure that, of course, we're going to need to pick up the phone and speak to people. You can't manage an entire recruitment process. I mean, you can. I know there are plenty of companies that do it, but to me, that's not real recruitment. They're the ones that will get replaced by AI. They'll get replaced by robots without question. If you're not speaking to your candidates and your clients and managing that process through verbal, you know, discussions, the nuances, how you're listening, you know, what you're picking up on the intuition, you will get replaced. That's a whole different podcast. In relation to this, I think I do agree with you, and that's what I haven't sort of lined you up for that answer, but I think it's really important that both parties have to understand what their learning curve is and that they're going to have to meet somewhere in the middle, because you can utilize the incredible natural tenacity and skills of a Gen Z and a Gen Alpha in terms of understanding how to incorporate their strategy on TikTok and LinkedIn and using video, and you know, that instant gratification actually creates pace, I'll tell you that much. But leaders will need to understand how to utilize, you know, with colleagues like yourself, how are we going to ensure that when we're hiring in people like this, that they've got the skills that wherefore the fortitude to deal with rejection and build a long-term strategy. So I think it rests with both parties. And if you're listening to this now and you've already had experience of, you know, where this has worked really well, we want to hear from you, you know, comment on this, because we've all got a responsibility to the future generations. You know, this is the future lifeblood of our industry and, let's face it, our economy. So I think it's really important, and I'm really pleased. What else are you seeing in terms of when you're speaking to clients? Because obviously this is, you know, the whole industry. What are the top performers doing in challenging? Because we are in a challenging market, and I don't care what you say. It's been a very challenging market, my most challenging market since the crash of 2009. So what are you seeing that the top billers are doing that we can learn from a BD point of view?
Yeah, well, I think there's, on top of my head, I think there's about three things that I can think of where what I see from top performers.
Okay.
So the first behavior/mindset I see from a top performer in this market, and I've got something interesting to say after this as well, is where they're speaking to a client and a client says, look, we've been thinking about this and look, we're going to go internal because of funds and because of the economy, blah, 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 blah. A average mid and low performer will have that happen and go, oh, toys out the pram, I can't believe this, I need to go for a cigarette, rah, like that. The top performer will go, totally appreciate that, try and deal with the objection. If they can't overcome it, go, cool, when can we book a call in next? When can we speak next? Find out who else the decision makers are, what the situation is, and then book follow-ups with them and play the long game and then just move on to the next thing, which is very, very difficult. But most top performers aren't newbies, right? They've been in the industry a while and they have that resilience to kind of go, okay, cool, I'll take it on the chin and I'll book in some follow-ups, because most of our wins come from the follow-ups, and then just keep in touch, because most recruiters don't keep in touch because there's not a win right there. So that's the first thing I see them do. The second thing is consistently improving. So having that growth mindset, and I know that's been plastered over everywhere. I think it's one of the first personal development books that changed my life. I read that book and I was like, oh my God, this makes so much sense. But a lot of the top performers that I deal with, they analyze their business, not so much so where it's death by analysis, but it's like they look at all their accounts, they look at their fees, they look at their ratios, they look at their relationships, and they go, what makes this one so good? What makes this one so bad? They analyze it and they learn from every single situation. So anything that happens to them, they always think and they reframe, what did I learn from it? What was a positive? Yeah. And what can I do now? Right?
Yep.
That would be mm-hmm. one thing as well. The only other thing that they do, well, there's other things as well, but the third thing I would say that they do is focus on relationships. Because in a slight downturn, most recruiters are like, where can I get a quick win? I'm going to chase my hot leads right now. And they get nowhere with that, because these clients are like, you know, we're not using agencies, the economy, blah, 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 blah. So the top performers build relationships, go out for coffees, go out for lunches, go to meetups and go to exhibitions and meet people, whether it's like this on a video call or in person, or even just a quick catch up. Like even for me, I've got monthly reoccurring calls with clients that have no budget for L&D this year. But guess what? When they're looking to hire someone for L&D,
absolutely.
Just emailed them a few times, or the guy they've been speaking to.
I agree.
So I'd say those are the three things.
I'd say, for me, that third point nails it. And it also nails it for how to thrive when things are going well. And it's how you build your reputation. I mean, my business is built on integrity. And it's not just a word that I pluck from anywhere. That, to me, is what it's all about. And I think, yeah, you know, all these things that you've talked about, absolutely, that consistency. And it's, you know, carving out your niche, understanding your ratios. I think ratios don't get talked about enough, because that's about how you operate and how smart you are. And that's why top billers tend to maybe don't burn out. They actually, you know, I was in and out eight till six, never stayed a day, you know, a minute later. So it's about working smart. But I think that last point is really, you know, it needs hammering home. And I also think, I genuinely think this, that a top biller will go above and beyond. And that includes for their candidates too. So they don't see the pound signs. Ironically, you might think it's the other way, and it's counterintuitive to think that. But they will take the call from the person saying, look, I'm not sure whether to move right now. Can you just spare me half an hour just for a quick catch up? Yep. And they don't think about, oh my God, I'm going to place them. It's that person will then come back to you, I promise you. And I recently shared a solo episode around how to thrive in a recession. And one of the key learns that I mean, unfortunately, I have been around so long that I've worked through a number of recessions now. But the fundamentals stay the same. And one of the key things that will allow you to trade through it, because it's always a cycle, is you've got to do the right thing by people. People will remember you, and you've got to hold your nerve with it and don't stop pulling your pants down. We've not covered that off yet, and I really want to just make this separate point myself. Do not drop your fees in the recession. Do not pull your pants down, because there's no way back. They're not coming back up again. So you've got to hold your nerve, and this isn't about, and going, this is going back actually to your very first point about value, because it's and whether you've got 6 months experience listening to this now, or you've got 16 years experience, you have to truly value the service that you're offering, not that candidate you're going to, you know, helicopter in. This is about the whole holistic experience. And this all plays back to, oh, it's so lovely, this whole segue is that you have a business to run and your desk is run like a business. And I think this has all been really valuable, because I think there's, you know, I don't think there's going to be a sudden switch on a light and it's going to suddenly go back to the way it was in 2022. And I think if you're waiting for that, you might be waiting quite a long time, because it's the first time I've ever known in 25 years that the market's ever gone boom in the way that it did, like this frenzy. I think you need to listen to what Charles is saying here. So in terms of, you know, your perception of the recruitment market, you know, we talked there a little bit around AI, et cetera. What's the one thing you would encourage recruitment leaders to be doing right now to ensure they're hiring in the best future top billers?
What would I do? I think recruitment leaders just really need to nail down, and it's surprising that so many businesses haven't done this, they need to nail down what their values are, what they stand for, what their mission is, firstly, right, which is basics, and then really nail down what they believe to be the high-performing behaviours and beliefs and habits. And I talk about this a lot, and this is kind of like the fundamentals of what neuro-linguistic programming is, right? Because everything stands or stems from your values and your beliefs, and that's externalized in your behavior, and habit is just a series of behaviors essentially run subconsciously. But a lot of recruitment leaders now especially will hire someone with a couple of years experience, or hire someone that maybe worked in sales that had some success, and then they join the business and they don't have the right behaviors. And well, what are the right behaviors? Well, most, you need to be incredibly hardworking to work in recruitment. Yeah. When I first started recruitment, I was doing ungodly hours, where I was speaking to a client of mine yesterday saying that I was working, because I was doing nurses, it was, you were on call 24/7. I'd be in the pub 7 or 8 pints deep taking calls to book nurses.
Crikey.
Yeah. Like literally, you had to in that market. And that gave me the work ethic into recruitment. Obviously, in my later years in recruitment, I was doing my 9 to 5 because I built my market. My LinkedIn presence allowed me to get my candidates in. Yeah. Work ethic is really, really important. Difficult to kind of understand, kind of, you know, when you're doing the interview, how do you really ask questions around their work ethic? You really need to actually get more of an understanding of their track record with, like, you know, do they help out with family? Have they had roles where they've had to work long hours, and really understand that stuff? The second thing I would say is, this really, it pisses me off a lot when I work with organizations that don't actually understand the whole concept of a growth mindset. If you hire a recruiter in, whether they're experienced or a trainee, that has this ego, which, by the way, ego can help make you a top biller and make you the most unsuccessful person in the world, right? You have to be extremely mindful of the ego. If that person's ego stops them from learning, they're not going to be good for the recruitment sector and for your business. And I don't like working with people that have this ego. If I sit down with someone on a one-to-one, normally when I work with businesses, I do a complimentary one-to-one with all the recruiters to get to know them, make sure I'm a fit for the business and stuff, and also vice versa. And if I have someone that just doesn't really know where they think they can improve, or don't really believe in learning and things like that, I'm not going to work with you. And I don't think they're going to be successful. And if they are, they'll be successful for 1 year and then things will go a little bit bad. And because they don't have that mindset, they're not going to improve. And that's always stuck with me, because my granddad on my mum's side, he was an immigrant from Cyprus, moved to the UK when he was 18 years old with nothing, and essentially grew a massive factory. He was the first person to bring XL, like, sort of women's dresses to Cyprus, and grew his factory. And he hired everyone from, this is before D&I was a thing, but everyone in the factory, all different sort of races and whatnot. And he was so, so successful. And he always said to me, the day you stop learning is the day you're 6 feet under. And that has
He was right, and he was a wise man, because I agree that every day is a school day. And I think it should be about relentless learning in life, never mind just recruitment, but recruitment. You are in the most unique industry because your product is a person and people change their minds all the time. And I think anybody listening now that thinks top billers know it all, they don't. And that's why they're top billers, because they are continuously learning. They're probably listening to this podcast right now and they are so curious and so inquisitive. I like what you said there regarding, I mean, obviously NLP and the behaviors and values. I see this on the other side where people, recruitment leaders often go on a vanity parade and take on people from competitors. And there's a prerequisite that, oh, well, they've worked for so-and-so, they must be good. And it's the most shambolic way to hire. And often I will say that to, you know, because I really challenge my clients, and anyone that has been a client of mine will corroborate that comment. Because actually it's not a prerequisite. It doesn't mean they're going to work well in your business. It, for me, I challenge people's ethics, their morals, how they do it, why they do it. You know, I literally lift the lid on a person's entire psychology, never mind their skill set, because that, I agree with you, behaviors comes from your values and your beliefs. And I would much rather, I'll often actually miss little basic things like schoolgirl errors. You know, maybe I don't know somebody's margin, but I can tell you what they, you know, who they live with, why they got into recruitment, which school, why they failed their A-levels. I'll know all of that because that's created this belief system within this person. So I think it all works. I think it's all so interesting. But I just want to pick up on a point you made, Charles, that you weren't condoning or promoting toxic culture of like working, you know, 12 hours a day. You weren't saying that when you're saying a work hard ethic. What you're saying is that you put the effort in. I just want, because somebody's bound to pick up on that. A keeper of worry is bound to pick up on that. He doesn't mean that.
No, I'm glad that you mentioned that, because when I was the L&D manager in my old company, you know, we had a lot of people that were like, oh, it's 5:30, what are you leaving already? And it's like, well, yeah, I've got a football match. Or I'm going to dinner with my mum and dad. It's just like, well, mate, you're a trainee. You need to be putting in the hours. And I'm just sat there thinking, like, my first ever job was that, you know, I had like I've been doing martial arts for like 15, 16 years. And I'm like, I've got a martial arts class. They're like, but do you want to earn money? I'm like, look at the bloody leaderboard. Look at my KPIs. No. I've smashed my targets. So when I say work hard, what I mean by that is if you set yourself a sprint in 2 hours to work the heck out of that job, you work the heck out of that job.
Yeah.
You don't up and then go, well, I've done a search. I've opened up about 15 tabs. I'm going to go make a coffee. And it's like, no. What I used to do to myself, right? I've got ADHD, so I struggle sitting down. And pre-medication, I was a bloody nightmare to manage, right? But what I would always do, and my manager would done a really good job of keeping me accountable for this, is do like 15-minute blocks in my two-hour sprint. So 15 minutes, I do a little search on LinkedIn, for example, and I find my candidates. In that 15-minute thing, I'm going to make one phone call or maybe get through to one person. And whilst I do that, then go make my coffee, come back down. Once I've done that, maybe go out for a bit of fresh air, come back, and then do little 15-minute blocks. But we would have little goals and little competitions between us. Like healthy, because it would be like, how many candidates do you think you could add to your project? Because I've done sales recruitment for the Southeast. You're doing the Southwest role. I think I can add 20 candidates to the shortlist. Cool, I'll do 20 as well. Half an hour later, I've done 19, I've done 20. Right, okay, that's one tally for you. Right, for the next half an hour, how many calls do you think you can make? Well, they've all got numbers. I'm going to make 20 calls. Cool, I'll make 20 calls. Maybe you get through to someone, they don't. So they've done the 20 calls, but you've had 3 conversations. And then the next one is, right, cool, how many CVs do we think you can get out? That for me is having fun and working hard.
Yeah.
When I say working hard, you don't need to do the ridiculous
stuff. He doesn't mean long.
If, however, and I, one of my good friends, he was at my wedding as well, a guy called Akbar, a bit of a shout out. He's like a demon. Like, he's insane. He's managing like 15 people last year, still build over 500 grand. Like, the guy is insane. He's on the same market for 10 years. He's incredible. He would work ungodly hours, right? But he was so disciplined. But A, he loved it, and B, he achieved so much in those hours. He didn't just stay for the sake of it. He didn't give a crap about what he was saying. But when it got to 5:30 and I went to my Thai boxing class, we both had the same amount of calls, the same amount of KPIs. But then he would do an extra 3 hours, and the next day I look at the leaderboard.
Oh, and you'd be like, but I agree. No, I'm really glad you brought that up, because I think it's a really good place to finish, because we're, you know, this is about promoting a healthy mindset, a healthy attitude, but it you know, you cannot achieve great success by just winging in, doing a little bit, hoping that you can get a result. And actually, I think this market, this particular recession, I mean, obviously lots of contributing factors, most of which are out of our actual control, by the way, But it will allow you to level up. I think it removes any complacency from anybody that had immediate success when they started their recruitment career, possibly post-COVID. And this has been absolute gold dust. And I'm so grateful to you, Charles. I think, you know, your energy is electric and it's really contagious. And I love the way that you've blended NLP into your training. I think it's, you know, we're so much more than just salespeople in recruitment. And I think if people want to connect to you, I think they're going to get so much value from you. You see? Oh, it's all been a very complete little story here. So thank you for joining us. And we hope to engage with you a lot more on that on LinkedIn. But thanks for joining us on the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast.
Thank you very much for having me, Alicia.
We are thrilled to welcome to the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast a new partner in KeyBridge IT. KeyBridge provide 24/7 support to all of their customers. Established in 2010, KeyBridge IT Solutions is a London-based, fully managed IT support and solutions provider. And for recruiters like me, we all need the IT expert to sort our problems out, whether it's with Microsoft Cloud, Microsoft 365, internet connectivity, security, Microsoft Azure. I mean, all these words actually mean nothing to me. What about you? But so much more than that. They work across many industries, not just recruitment, but if you're listening from the world of leisure or charity or finance or even marketing, they will be able to help. So click on the link in the podcast show and get to know KeyBridge IT. We are so proud to be partners of Needy, the gifting revolution. Here at Key Recruitment, we absolutely love to send out bespoke gifts to our new place candidates to welcome them in their new jobs, but also as an extra special thank you to clients or when a team is celebrating something really special. But to be honest, we were really fed up with dull or mediocre gifts that you could just buy on the high street that didn't really reflect who we are at Key Recruitment as a business. This is why we chose Needy. Needy source sustainably from the UK's best independent businesses, offering the most perfect array of bespoke gifts and experiences too. So no more boring bottles of plonk or rubbish boxes of chocolates. This is how you make your customers' day with a gift that really matters and shows that you really want to do something special for them. For more information on how psychology and AI forming to make the best gift experience for you, click on the link and remember to mention the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast when ordering. The Recruiters Recruitment Podcast is thrilled to be partnering with Inclusion Crowd. Inclusion Crowd put the D into diversity, but do it disruptively. We love that. Really reflecting what we're about. I was introduced to Inclusion Crowd back in 2020, and I've been absolutely blown away with what they're doing to totally transform the recruitment and hiring sector. They believe at Inclusion Crowd that companies should be reflective of society and that no matter who you are listening now, you have a story to tell. You have a contribution to make. An Inclusion Crowd educates you in allowing your voice to come out and share that story, but doing it in a way that educates your colleagues and your customers equally. Inclusion Crowd, like the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast, has clients all over the world, and they specialise in our industry. What we all want to do together is to maintain best practice and to raise industry standards to enable us to attract and retain the best talent, but doing so inclusively and with true diversity. By doing this, by accomplishing a true EDI policy within your business, you will also retain the top talent as well as attract new talent, which is a win-win for everybody listening, making more profitable business and a much better industry, highly regarded. Inclusion Crowd are also the official awarding body for the Inclusion and Diversity Certification Mark within recruitment. We are so proud to be assisting and partnering Inclusion Crowd. If you want to know more information, please click on the link in this episode And remember to mention the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast when you do so. Now, back to the episode.